You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Arielle Nissenblatt from Earbuds Podcast Collective and Squadcast.fm. Katie and Nathan asked me to stop by and give you a heads up that they use strong language in the show, so listener discretion is advised. And since you are obviously a fan of podcasts, if you want to get more podcast recommendations, you can subscribe to my newsletter, Earbuds Podcast Collective. You can get it by going to earbuds.audio. That's the website. And then you'll get 5 podcast episodes on a theme each week curated by a different person. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history.
Hi, everybody. Nathan, how are you?
Fantastic. So what are we talking about today, Katie?
Today, we are talking about Rani Lakshmibai, or as she's also sometimes known, Rani of Jhansi, who is an Indian queen who gave a big old middle finger to the British when they tried to take control over her part of India. So,
yes, bitch.
Warrior queen.
Yes, and that's why I had to make this super refreshing drink that is a take on a Moscow Mule. Mm-hmm. So I did like a Moscow Mule, but with Indian spices. So essentially, I made my own ginger beer. That's what I found out.
Ginger beer?
Like I took like a bunch of ginger, a buttload of ginger, to be exact.
How do you measure that out?
I literally took like a big old ginger root. And if you can see me right now,
they can't. It's a podcast.
Big old ginger root. And I chopped it up, boiled it with a little bit of stevia, cardamom, cumin, and coriander. Those are the spices. Mm. And then boiled that down into a nice little syrup. And then mixed it with sparkling water. I made my own ginger beer, y'all. And then I put like a little bit of vodka, 2 shots.
A little bit.
And it was delicious. So you mix all that together with lime juice and garnish with the lime and mint. And you've got your Indian mule for our Indian mule of a bitch.
This is delicious. Thank you for... that doesn't sound like it was an easy one to make. So thank you for...
No, it wasn't. It was... She's a little bit complicated.
You're a little bit extra with your drinks, but this is
our girl. She's also extra.
Yeah. Before we get into her, though, let's do a couple of Patreon shout outs. So first, we wanted to say thank you to Catherine, Nicole, Allie, Maggie, and Jasmine.
Also, thank you to Bryce, Cassidy, Danielle, Donnie, and Taylor.
Also, I want to say thank you to Aubrey. I posted on Instagram being like, anybody want to help us with some of these pronunciations? And she was so cute. She sent me over a video of her partner's mom, who is who I believe lives in India, doing some pronunciations for us. So thank you so much, Aubrey. That was so nice. However, we are still going to completely fuck up. Sorry. All right. Well, let's get into her life. Rani Lakshmibai was born November 19th, 1828, though some sources do have her a little bit younger, like 7 years younger. But either way, our girl is a Scorpio. So Nathan, tell us about Scorpios.
This fits her to a T.
She's very Scorpio. Like,
she has got the Scorpio vibes. She's brave, determined, ambitious. She's a little bit jealous. She's a little bit resentful. I mean, this is her.
Yeah.
All around.
Absolutely. As for the age discrepancy, though, we are going to go with the 1828 birthday. It just makes more sense in this story, in my opinion.
Yeah.
it's most traditionally believed. As we talk about it more, it just seems to make more sense.
It gets problematic. Yeah.
Wasn't it Anne Boleyn? Aren't her two different dates of birth 7 years? Like the discrepancy between her year? Isn't that also 7 years difference?
Right. Oh, look at that. Look at that Brit history.
Look, I cannot remember where I put my keys on any given day, but shit like that, I just remember off the top of my head.
Yeah. So at the time of her birth, she was given the name of Manikarnika Tambe. We've discussed several times on this show that their name changes.
Yeah.
So BT Dubs, it's her OG name.
And like we've discussed, like with Empress Wu, and you know, we've just had other women on this show that like their name changes with like their status. That's not the name that she's known as through history. You know,
yeah,
she's
Ronnie is like queen.
Yeah.
Ronnie means queen. And I found this very interesting is that, but yeah, queen consort. But I found this very interesting is like Rania. Rania means queen in Spanish.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see how dialects mix.
And Lakshmi Bai was the name she adopted after her marriage, after the Hindu goddess Lakshmi. So yeah, but all of her friends and family called her Manu, which I think is very cute.
Yes, and are you ready for a rabbit hole? Because there's gonna be several.
This is the first rabbit hole of many.
Before, like, prefacing everything, Hinduism isn't something that us Westerners delve into a whole lot.
This is our first Hindu queen that we've covered. So, like, yeah, I haven't researched this part of the world before.
Yes, and the city she was born in was in the modern-day city of Varanasi. And Varanasi is considered one of the seven holy cities, and some view it as the holiest of the seven cities.
Ooh.
And it's believed that if you die in Varanasi, you will end the cycle of death and rebirth.
I'll link to this YouTube video that I watched. Like, it's believed if you die there, you're done with your lives. And so people will, like, go there to die.
That's dark, but I'm okay with it.
But it's also like just part of the culture of that city. I mean, death is a part of life, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I found that really interesting, and it was just a really weird little rabbit hole that I didn't expect to go down.
Katie's like, I'm a Pisces.
This is my last life anyway. I'm a Pisces. But she was born to a pretty well-to-do family. She would have been considered like middle nobility. Basically, her father was this guy named Morapant, and he worked for the Indian equivalent of like the prime minister, which is a title called the Peshwa. And the Peshwa was a guy named Baji Rao. We need to touch on him just a little bit because I think it's important. Baji Rao was more or less like a puppet ruler. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Surprise, surprise, the British put a puppet in power.
The British put him in power and he didn't, because, you know, it was under British rule, which we'll get to in a minute. Yeah, they just wanted somebody that they could control, basically. Dad's job was kind of a big deal. Kind of a big deal in India. He was very high up in the military and worked very closely with the Peshwa to create policies. So from a really young age, our girl would have been no stranger to war and politics and all the drama that goes on with that.
So let's get back to her family life.
Yeah.
So her dad, Morpant, and her mom, we know nothing about her parents' marriage, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But sadly, also, we don't know basically anything about her mom because she died and she was only like 4 years old. So again, we don't have that mother-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
Raised primarily by her father at the court of Peshwa.
Which, that sucks that we just don't know anything about, like, what her mother died of, or, like, what, yeah, like, So we don't have any knowledge of her having any siblings. So her dad, he was like, I got one shot at raising a badass kid. I'm not throwing away my shot. Yeah, absolutely.
Not giving away my
shot.
Okay, any chance that you get Katie
for Hamilton.
Singing Hamilton.
There we go. His shot.
But did dad succeed?
Yes.
As a parental unit, yes.
he was like, I got to make this kid known. I got to do well by her. And he absolutely did, for sure.
Yeah, she was educated. She was home reading and writing. Cool. Girls don't get that chance in life.
No, yeah, it seems like at this time, even with the nobility, girls weren't really taught to read and write. He was basically giving her a boy's education for the time.
Yeah, she learned shooting, horsemanship,
yeah,
fencing. Like, these are not in the realm of feminism at the time, and we are here for it.
Yeah,
it's unusual. And we see you, Miss Independent.
Yeah. Do you remember when we covered Amina Azaria?
Yeah.
It's given me that vibe. Like, because she was raised basically like a boy and taught to fight and lead armies.
I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that the parent was like, I wish you were a boy, but we're here we are.
But he could, I mean, it would have been completely acceptable for society at the time for him to be like,
and she
fuck that daughter.
Never, she would have never been who she is if she wasn't raised the way she was.
You know, this is a show about women in history, but we got to have allies. And it sounds like he was someone that was all for, you know, girls can be equal, girls can be smart, girls can be special too. So, hey, Dad. Thank you.
Yeah, right. And she was way ahead of any kid her age. She would have been that little kid that was like having full-on conversations with adults and being like, but why? But why?
But tell me.
But why?
Yeah. But why? And discuss things that seemed like way, that should be way over her head. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's a little bit of what we would call a tomboy. Like, she's definitely got those vibes of, I don't care what you think.
I don't care about wearing dresses. What? I don't care about, I read like she liked to wear turbans. Mm. That was specifically just for men. There was no androgyny in like the way that people were supposed to dress.
I love this for her. Yeah. She's already breaking barriers.
Yes. Manu would have spent a lot of time with the other kids of the people that worked at the court of the Peshwa. But mostly those kids that were brought to court almost exclusively were boys. So that probably also explains why she was a bit of a quote unquote tomboy. She only ever hung out with little boys, you know, like she wasn't hanging out with other little girls. Though the Peshwa at the time gave her nicknames, which translate into English of basically meaning like beautiful, lively child. So, yes. So this is for, this is the, me, a little old me.
You're calling me a beautiful, lovely child, darling.
So that's kind of the only time we really get a description of, I mean, it's not even a description of what she looks like, but we have to assume that she would have been considered pretty for the time.
Yes. Yeah. Would it be normal for girls to act like this? Absolutely not.
Horseback riding, fencing, playing with the boys. Because she would like fight with the boys. There was one story that I read where one of the boys at court had an elephant and he wouldn't let her ride it. And so she was like, fuck you, one day I'm going to have 300 elephants and you're not going to get to ride any of those. And it's like, are we talking about that boy on any podcast these days? No.
We are talking to Ronnie of Chonzi.
And I bet she did have elephants. Fuck you.
All of them. But Indian culture compared to Western culture, very conservative, even in today's standards, very much so. So let's rewind the hands of time. Yep, that's how we rewind. And it was super out of the ordinary to be an independent woman at the time.
Women were expected to be housewives, and that's it.
Yeah.
Arranged marriages were a big thing. I think they still are.
They are.
I've been watching a lot of Indian Matchmaker. Do you ever watch that show?
Katie's like, I am an expert.
I'm an expert on this because I have seen 2.5 seasons of this crappy Netflix show. But no, like,
it's so true.
I mean, at least on that show, it doesn't seem like in any of the people that she's setting up, the people that are like our age, our generation, aren't doing, but a lot of them will have their parents on and their parents will be like, well, yeah, we were an arranged marriage. So yeah, it still seems to be a relevant part of the culture. But yeah, once you were married back then, you weren't expected to use your brain. Like, you know, it was just, all right, you're a housewife, you serve your husband.
I mean, it's kind of the same vibes that the Brits have been giving for years. It's like, hey, you're prized cattle. Yay, we're going to sell you off for a dowry.
All of history ever. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, luckily today there's, you know, there's more rights. Things are definitely more progressive than they were in the 1800s.
But, and while Ronnie of Jonzi didn't grow up with that, she was the trailblazer. Like, if you look back at it, like, they're all going to be like, Ronnie of Jhansi.
She's a huge, she's still a huge figure of national pride in India. Mm-hmm. And she also happened to have a uterus. So,
she can't think. She has a uterus. Oh.
Okay, before we go any further, I do think we need to take a quick dive into a history lesson regarding the political layout of India at the time. Like we kind of mentioned a little bit already, you know, the Brits were there. This is going to be a huge sweeping oversimplification, because this shit is complicated, but you need to understand a couple of things. In the 1600s, the British landed in India and set up what is known as the East India Company. They were primarily there to trade for spices, but as the British Empire was wont to do, they soon started colonizing and trying to spread Christianity.
Yeah, so eventually this trading company got backing from the crown and the parliament, and the British government started sending the English military forces, yeah, basically.
Right.
And now somehow this trading post is basically colonizing and taking over India.
It's so confusing, because like the East Indian Trading Company is like, it's not the British government. It's a trading company that was getting tax money and an army. So it's so weird. I don't like, cause I,
and the Brits are gonna Brit, Brit, Brit.
Brits are gonna Brit, 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 Brit. It was just so strange, because like we've read a lot about, I mean, the British people wasn't the only empire colonizing. Portuguese were all over the place. Spanish were all over the place. But this was the first one where I saw where I was like, what started as a trading post turned into running a major country? Like, because India's big. India's huge, you know? Like,
yeah, that's an understatement.
Like, that, I didn't even bother going too deep down that rabbit hole, because I knew I would never get out.
She would have been like the NBC hit show Lost.
Lost. I would have been lost for six seasons.
So it's also worth noting that at the time of Ronnie of Jhansi, India wasn't a united country, mm-hmm, that we think of today. So if you listen to our Grania O'Malley episode, it was kind of like that.
Right.
Like state, local leadership kind of things. And also in that episode, many of the rulers would recognize the authority of the British, and the British would more or less allow people to live autonomously and promise
if you recognize us, if you recognize us and you pay us some taxes, we're gonna take care of you, and we're, mm-hmm, not gonna interfere with your shit. Not interfere with your religion. Do you remember?
Spoiler alert, they did.
Yeah, I know. There's this one Eddie Izzard bit where he's talking about like when the British came and colonized America and talking to the Native Americans. And it's like, yes, there's more of us coming, but don't worry, we always keep our promises.
I love Eddie Izzard.
I know.
Can you not?
I know. And that's when I was reading that, that just kept popping into my mind. Like, don't worry. Yes, there's more of us coming, but don't worry, we always keep our promises.
So in return, the East India Company would help them build schools and roads and, you know, infrastructure. Yay.
Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. And
no, I would say colonization, you know, usually is a bad thing.
Yeah, it is.
But one thing that I thought was really cool is with the colonization that the Brits were doing, they were doing some really cool stuff for women, like building schools for girls. But then it turned into this whole thing that of like, if you sent your girl to that school for girls, you were looked at, like, society looked down on you. But they were, so colonization isn't always a good thing, but sometimes, I mean, roads and schools for girls is pretty cool. Is pretty cool,
that's
right?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
So
it's complicated. It's too complicated to sum up in a few minutes.
Too culturally complicated for me.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Yes.
The Brits started modernizing India by opening more trade, more routes, more buildings, more roads, more schools. And the natives are loving it because they're getting more money. Yeah. Because in the words of Notorious B.I.G., more money, more problems.
More money, more problems.
Because slowly they start to manipulate the government.
Right.
Just piece by piece.
Right, yeah. They just kind of start tweaking shit. And it's also important to remember, this is only like, what, 40, 50 years after the United States Revolutionary War? And so, mm-hmm, I think the Brits also maybe have a little bit of like a chip on their shoulder of like
PTSD.
We need to do it better this time. Yeah. But no, this is all important. We promise. However,
I'm thinking like British people at the time looking at themselves going, do better.
Like it just in a mirror, just looking in a mirror, be like, colonize better. Yeah. Okay, no, but this is super important. We promise, while you kind of let that history lesson sink in, Nathan, I'm going to go top off my drink.
Why not?
Why not?
Let's do it.
We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. It's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Okay, we're back. And now let's get back into the story.
Yeah, man who is really well connected, growing up at a political court, and her dad's a pretty big deal, guys. Mm-hmm. So when the Maharaju, you know, the king.
King, basically,
that's
yeah.
Basically what that is.
Yeah.
He's the king of a place called Jhansi, and he's putting out a casting call for wives.
Yeah.
Like, herd him up.
I need a wife.
Prize cattle.
Bring him in, yeah. And so in this casting call, he sends his dudes out to Varanasi to check out Manu. He was like, oh, I heard that this one high-ranking political official over there has a cute daughter. Let's go check her out.
Mm-hmm. And this was in 1842, which is why we're thinking, like, hopefully 1828 is her birth year. Because it's like, she would have been 14 versus 7.
Yeah.
Let's
so,
not.
So 14 is 14 is gross, but at least it's post-puberty.
Not 7.
Yeah.
Gosh. This is where we are.
The Maharaja, who we'll get to know a little bit more later, was searching for a wife that he could make babies with sooner rather than later. Because it was this big thing that we will get into. And 7-year-olds can't make babies anytime soon.
Ugh.
And so, yeah, gross. Gross to think about. But still, this is why I think that she was 14 and not 7. Because if he's like, I need to make babies sooner rather than later, why would you look for a child? What?
I hate it here. Now, there's this story that we read about how Manu's dad had her horoscope read when she was younger.
Oh, I loved this.
Apparently, this was something that was really common, not just back then, but today still, to have your kids' horoscope read before you're arranging a marriage. I mean, they have marriages that their gowns are based on the astrological signs. Like, it's a whole
thing. Oh, really?
Thing.
I mean,
yes.
Again, sorry to mention Indian matchmakers so many times, but yeah. Like, sometimes when she's, like, matching a couple of her clients, she'll bring their chart to, like, a astrologer who would, like, read their charts and be like, oh, yes, this will be a good match. This will be a bad match. So whenever I saw this on here, I was just like, ah, oh, that is so cool. Like, I would never actually base a marriage myself on something like that. But,
probably not a good idea.
But, I mean, but it's a pretty cool, it was just a cool thing. I just thought it was cool.
Yeah, and man whose horoscope didn't match with anybody.
In her like clan, like where they lived in Varanasi, yeah. They were like, oh, she's going to be hard-headed. She's going to be a bitch. She's going to try to overpower her husband. So none of the
boys... why not make her queen?
Right?
Like, this sounds right.
The families in her native neighborhood were like, no, we're not marrying any of our sons to this girl who's going to want to rule the marriage. Yeah, so why not queen?
But whether it's true or not, this rumor stays around, and it's good that it does.
It's part of her legend. Like, yeah,
it's her legend. It's yeah. who she is. She wasn't meant to be matched with anybody. She's gonna rule
she's
it
gonna,
on her
she's
own.
She's gonna have 300 elephants, bitch. Get out of here. Yeah, so who knows if that's true, but it's just a fun part of the story. So we have no idea if that's why Manu was chosen in the end, but we do know that Jhansi and Varanasi are not close to each other at all. Today, that's about a 10-hour drive in a car. So back then, whenever I'm trying to calculate how far it would be to travel, like, by horse or carriage or something
Google
like that.
She Google Maps it and then walks and then doubles it.
I put it on Google Map and I put it on bike. Because you can put it, like, by car, by walking, or by bike. With, like, taking a break to rest and stuff, that's probably, like, 2 or 3 days, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And she wasn't going to be seeing her family at all. She's not doing anything. She's, like, 14.
I know.
So this is a big, scary journey.
With all of our queens, that's always one of my least favorite parts of their stories, is thinking about how scared they must be going at 14, going to live with a stranger in a place they've never been to before. So that just sounds so scary.
Scary. Yeah. But we really couldn't find anything about her journey to Jhansi. Though I did read that her dad was given a residence in Jhansi as part of her wedding agreement, okay. AKA dowry.
Yeah.
So hopefully that means that he traveled with her. We hope. They remained close.
I mean, if he had a house there and he didn't come visit, that would have been a bitch move. So I'm really hoping they remained close. In my mind, they had a really nice, close relationship. So,
yeah. And like we said, this is a very scary journey for being 14.
Yeah.
Like, I was just entering high school and,
So either way, what we do know is that she is definitely in Jhansi by May 1842, and in that month, she married the Maharaja of Jhansi, a guy named Gangadhar Rao. And forgive me if I have that all wrong. We got a review the other day that was like, oh my God, just look up the pronunciations on YouTube. And it's like, one.
Which one?
Yes.
Which pronunciation?
There's so many different pronunciations on YouTube. And also, if I try to say it like in the way that Indian people say it, it just sounds like I'm...
Oh. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, like, so Gangadhar Rao is how the best I can do here. He would have been 28 and Manu is 14. So that is gross.
Yeah.
At least he wasn't like 62, though, because we've definitely seen that shit before, too.
Oh, we have, and this is problematic. It's not going to get any less
problematic. Let's just move on.
Let's just talk about the wedding, honey,
yeah.
Because they allocated 40,000 rupees for the occasion, which is like the equivalent of 150K in, you know, modern day United States dollars.
That's the best I could do. There's a website called N2013 dollars, and you can put the year you want, and then the year you want it to like compare to the year now, and it'll tell you like the conversion rate. So first I had to convert rupees to dollars because I don't know how much. And then I had to pop it in there. So that is my best guess, about 150,000, which is, that would have been a lot back then for a wedding.
They're just partying in the streets.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
They're dancing in the streets.
Fireworks, cannons shot off. And like, that's back when fireworks were kind of rare, you know? So to do fireworks, you have to be a bajillionaire, basically, you know, anyway. And yeah, feasting, the whole town was feasting. It was a huge fucking celebration. So
I know, and we're not sure if it's truth or legend, but the wedding at Gangadhar would have been realized that, like, this is his wife. He would have been like, okay, we've got it. So there's this tradition in India that you tie the bride and the groom's garments together.
Yeah.
So the bride is supposed to act like shy and coy. Oh, what are you doing? And the story goes that when they tie the bride and groom together, Manu very loudly says, "Better tie it tight."
like, fuck yeah, I'm your fucking queen now. Tie that shit tight, because you are not getting away.
I love it.
That would have been a scandal, though, because the bride spoke at all, and that she said something so bold. Like, people...
I love this.
People would have been talking, like, did you fucking hear what she said on her wedding day? Like,
she's got a mouth on her, and I love it.
Yes, yes.
And now Manu is given the title of Rani.
Yes.
But she's not Rani Manu.
No.
She has to take on a regal name. So she chooses the official name to be Rani Lakshmibai. And this is after the major Hindu goddess, Lakshmi.
I think it might be fun on Patreon to do maybe an episode on the goddess Lakshmi. What do you think?
I could go down several rabbit holes.
Please do. I was thinking about that. I didn't have time to go down a rabbit hole on her except to like just get the the bullet points. So yeah, let's do that. But like, yeah, let's take a quick detour just to kind of learn the high points about the goddess Lakshmi. Surprise, surprise. She's the goddess of fertility. Since, ooh, of course, Manu's main job is to make them babies on babies on babies on babies.
But Lakshmi is also really interesting for other reasons. She's closely associated with Maya, which is a Hindi like Buddhism thing, which is magic and illusion, is what Maya means, illusion. She's also the goddess of wealth, passion, power, and you know, she's gonna get her own episode. So let's leave her.
Yeah. She was probably still known as Manu, like amongst her friends and like, you know, her close relations. But in public, she is now Rani Lakshmibai.
Also, she's married now, y'all. So, yeah. You know, let's get to know the hubby a little bit more. Yeah, that was cringeworthy, as it should be. So the Maharaja of Jhansi, Gangadhar, was twice her age. Gross.
Yeah.
And this was his second marriage. Gross. And his first wife had died, and so did the son he had from the first marriage.
To tag along with the story of Rani's horoscope, the legend is also that Gangadhar's horoscope shit showed up that didn't make him a super desirable husband for families to like welcome in, even though he was the king, you know? And therefore, no one wanted to marry their daughter to him. And that's why he went so far as to go all the way to Varanasi to find like this girl was completely plucked out of obscurity, basically, because he really, really needed to have a son, which we will get into a little bit later on why, but like, it was like, oh, I need to be making them babies soon.
Yeah. Something we should mention about the system with the British East India Company is that they wanted things done the Brit way when it came to succession.
This is so much like the Grainne O'Malley episode when it comes to this.
It is
kind of shit.
Like,
yeah,
they just basically make you into what they want you be. So if a king does not have a legitimate heir when he dies, then the right to name the next Maharaja goes to, guess who? The Brits.
Hello.
Hello, governor. Hello.
Yeah, we spot a tea. Sorry. My British husband is probably in the next room being like, what the fuck is she doing? So, no, it was a policy called the Doctrine of Lapse. Mm-hmm. And legitimately, it's like set up as like a back channel for the British to find like a loophole to seize control. They're like, we're not here to take over your lands, take over your customs, unless we absolutely can. And it basically stated if the current Maharaja died without a male heir, then the Brits get to decide who rules that part of India. And as one might expect, everyday Indians thought this doctrine of lapse was total bullshit. You know, no one really thought the Brits would like actually enact it. You're not gonna really take over this, right?
Much and less they all thought wrong.
Yeah, narrator voice, they were incorrect.
Let's go back to Gangadhar, and he's a pretty popular ruler.
Yeah, people like him.
His older brother had kind of fucked up the economy and just wasn't generally good at leading. So when Gangadhar hits the scene, he was very much like, okay, now Jonzi,
let's get information. Yes, absolutely.
And he more or less brings order, and everything is in order in the land, and everybody seems to love him.
He helps Jonzi get their shit back together after his brother had just kind of fucked everything up, basically.
Yeah.
So everyone liked him, and they liked him so much that they looked the other way at his very, for the time, scandalous hobbies. Mm-hmm. So the first hobby, which doesn't seem that weird, he loved the arts. He specifically loved the theater.
Okay, where's my husband?
He specifically loved to play the female parts in shows. So he loved to dress up as women and play the lead woman in a play, which, you know, you might, because, you know, he was really into the arts, so maybe he's thinking like Shakespearean, being like, because, you know, in Shakespeare's time, men played the women.
Or maybe he's living out his non-binary life.
This is about 120 years after Charles II said, actually, women can just do theater, it's fine. So, this was a hobby of his that, like, people just were like, but he's a good king, so just look the other way.
You know? Just look the other way. Yeah. Like, our king likes to dress in women's clothes.
Yeah.
Like, he's chilling with his friends.
Who are mostly women.
Mostly women. Yeah. And he felt so close to them. He could, you know, he would always recognize 4 days a month of untouchability when women would seclude themselves because of, you know, the period.
Yeah, it was like this part of the culture back then. Yeah, women that could afford to because they're of nobility would like seclude themselves while they're on their periods and then go through like this ritual when they're off their periods where they can like be back in society, which, you know what? I know it's a form of oppression, but that actually sounds nice. Like, you're on your period.
He's like, I need 4 days.
You're on your period. You can't go to work. You can't go to the groceries. You can't do any chores. You gotta just sit at home.
Katie's like,
and watch Indian Matchmaker for 4 days. Like,
yeah. Well, Indian Matchmaker and Bridgerton.
And Bridgerton.
That's what this is.
Sign me the fuck up. But I know. He would recognize 4 days of the month of his like untouchability, which, I mean, even now I would, if
little trans, just a little, like he might be,
it's so, we're not saying. It's such a weird, complicated area to try to look at these people with modern lenses, yeah, of things like
we're in 2023 brain,
yeah,
right? And we are seeing, you know, gender fluidity that didn't happen in the 19th century
but for 19th century India, in how they would have viewed it, in the words of the famous scholar Hank Hill, he would have said, that boy ain't right.
She brought it there. And she's bringing it back.
Yeah. But we recognize gender fluidity then, now, but that's not really something in this culture that was relevant. So it was very... He must have been such a good king for them to just look the other, like, yeah.
That's the whole point, is like, the people of Jonzi liked him so much that he obviously was doing something right.
But they were like, just like,
they wouldn't have been like, oh, this guy likes to be every now
I
and
thought
then.
That was really interesting.
No big deal. Like, it was MBD.
It might also explain why the families of the more prominent, you know, the more prominent families didn't want to marry their daughters to him.
Yeah.
It might have had nothing to do with his horoscope. They were like, he does what? Like, so.
True.
True. So that was another rabbit hole I went down.
Yeah, that's a whole another one. But at the end of the day, was the marriage a happy one? Yeah, Katie said it best. She didn't say anything. There's not a whole lot that we know definitively about the marriage.
Yeah.
It seems like at first he was not interested in hanging out with his wife, which...
He was 28, she was 14. Of course he went, like, that's... What the fuck are they going to talk about?
There is one account, which linked in the show notes, that suggests that he was kind of an asshole-y husband.
Yeah.
He kept her under lock and key, wouldn't let her go anywhere, see anybody, except for her ladies-in-waiting. And then in some stories, he never really warmed up to her and they never really got along. In some stories, they said that she eventually won him over with, guess what, girls? Her wit.
Yeah.
Being a stubborn bitch.
Yeah.
I love this. So, like, this is my vibe.
It sucks, though. There don't seem to be any personal, like, diaries or letters that survive of her. There are, like, letters that she, like, from, like, the political standpoint that survive from her. She didn't keep a diary. She didn't, like, write to any of her. I don't think she had any girlfriends, so she didn't, like, write letters. So we just don't know if it was
she
happy.
She wrote a letter to her horse.
If it was miserable. Like,
I love her. She
was such a horse girl. Yeah. So, yes. Now 14, we can all agree, is way too young to be having babies.
Preach.
We're happy to say that she did not have babies at the age of 14. She also didn't have babies at the age of 15.
Oh.
Or 16.
Oh.
Or 18.
Uh-oh.
Or 20.
Uh-oh. So, for 9 years.
Yeah.
She remained pretty not knocked up.
Unknocked up. Knocked down. She was...
knocked down. Oh, that's a new Queen's podcast statement.
I wish we knew more. Like, did her husband resent being married to her? Or was he just so icked out by the thought of sex with a girl? Like, I...
They're not compatible sexually. Let's just
who
throw
knows?
That out.
Or were one of both of them just, you know, not... Okay.
Ding-dong problems.
Ding-dong problems, maybe, ding-dong you problems. Know?
I mean, both. Maybe both.
Are the stories of him just neglecting her true?
But hot take.
Okay.
She probably just had a hard time getting pregnant.
You think so? Like, well, I don't know. Maybe she was like, who knows? Like, maybe she, on day one, was like, why are you dressed like a woman? And then he just neglected her after that for judging him. Like, I think there is a movie about her life. So maybe maybe I need to watch that and see if they touch on this. But yeah, who knows?
But obviously there's some sexual,
something's
physical,
going on.
Emotional, like they're not bonding. They're not
something's
bonding.
Going on. Nine yeah. years. And when your entire point, I mean, if he doesn't have a male heir, John Z is going to go to the Brits. So, like, why did it take her 9 years to get pregnant?
But whatever the situation, our girl finally gets pregnant yes. in 1851.
Yes.
She would have been, like, 23, which is a nice age.
Yes.
Like, love this for her. And I'm sure she would have preferred a little bit earlier,
yeah.
you know, at a cringier age. But better late than never,
yeah.
right? This is what she was supposed to
what
do.
Was
it
supposed
was
to
her
do.
Baby boy.
Yes, it's a baby boy.
Baby boy, you'll be on my mind.
Fulfill my regency.
we both sang.
They named him Damodar Rao. And everyone in Jonzi just let out a sigh of relief. Like,
yes.
The British would officially be off their fucking backs now. Like, until... tragedy struck. Yeah. And Damodar died only at age 4 months.
Oh, no.
I know.
Can you imagine, like, she just spent, like, 9 years trying to get pregnant. And then she gets pregnant, has the baby boy on her regency.
And then it's like,
oh, but... you're a baby factory. Can't you just do it again? And she's like, no.
Apparently not. Yeah. Like, so our girl Manu is probably finding herself in a really rough place in life right now. Whole job. The entire reason she's there is to have a son so she can keep the people of Jonzi in the life that they know. Like, and possibly keep them out of the hands of the British. And her baby boy has died. It already took her like nearly a decade to make that baby boy to begin with. So outlook not great that she's going to have some more, you know?
I mean, that's an understatement. Outlook not great. Mm-hmm. Plus, hubby ain't doing too good either.
Yeah.
Gandahar's health is really taking a hit. And we're not sure of what. It's just like the quote unquote elderly king.
I kept reading elderly king. Dude was 39 when he died. Like,
that's not elderly.
Let's.
Oh, God. Where's my walker?
I know.
Ugh. But still, it's just like, one day he gets sick and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. So it's quote unquote elderly king.
So it became obvious. Like, all right, we're not having these babies on babies on babies on babies. And I don't got a whole lot of time left. So we need to figure something out.
And they decide to adopt, which was pretty common in that culture.
Yeah.
We've seen this in ancient Roman cultures. We've seen this multiple places. If you're powerful and you want to succeed and you need to have an heir, no big deal. Just adopt a guy that you just randomly know and be like, you're my heir.
You're my
heir.
Like,
that just makes sense.
We saw that so much in like the Agrippina series. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that wasn't, and that was super, super common in Indian culture. Like, okay, I'll just adopt someone legally, make them my heir. Cool. So Gangadhar has a cousin, and the cousin has a 5-year-old son named Anand. So the Maharaja and the Rani adopt him and changed his name to Damodar Rao. That is the name of their dead son, which seems therapy. These people need therapy. But
Gangadhar named Damodar as his heir and Manu as his regent until he was old enough.
Yeah.
So the people of Jhansi would have been totally fine with this.
Yeah, that's their norm. That's their custom. Yeah.
We just need to make sure the Brits are okay, right?
Yeah. Like, okay, we've got this adopted kid. Can they back the fuck up now? Right.
This is gonna get tricky.
Yes. So Gangadhar and Manu both knew that the British might not accept this setup. So on his deathbed, they invite like the local British officials to come witness him officially adopt Damodar. The guy at the local level was basically like, I don't see this being a problem. This should be fine. What could we possibly have to argue with this?
Yeah, so in 1853, at around 40 years old, the Maharaja Gangadhar Rao died. He thought he had left peace.
Cleaned that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, everything. This is fine.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. It was not.
Yeah. We don't know if she grieved her husband. So we have no idea. We don't know. Nothing leads us to believe that they were close. So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Manu thought all the loose ends were tied up.
Yeah.
She thought this was done. She's setting herself up. She's got her heir down. She's going to rule for the next 12 years or so. And it appears that Damodar moved to court. Manu ended up taking over everything, his education, his upbringing. Like, it's time to get shit done.
Okay, I've got something to do now. It must also be nice to, like, have a purpose. Because if she was kind of, like, for the last, like, 10, 12 years, just kind of locked up and only people she talked to was her lady in waiting, she was probably fucking bored.
And she's one of those gals that's like, she's not going to get locked down like that.
She's not a sit home and watch Netflix kind of chick. So now she's like, I've got shit to do. I've got the responsibility of educating this boy. She would have, I think, felt fulfilled at this point. It seems like the people really liked her. She was even-headed. She was smart. She was tough when she needed to be. And she knew the people had liked her husband's policies. So she was like, cool, let's just keep doing what we've been doing. No major changes. And everybody was like, sweet. We love this.
She's popular.
Popular.
She's gonna be popular.
Yes.
So on that note, literally, the note of wicked.
Which is great. Yeah. We'll be right back, guys. Popular. You're gonna be popular.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter. And for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey y'all, spooky season is here, and if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Okay, we are back. And the local British officials who told Gangadhar and told Manu, like, I don't see this being a problem. This will be accepted by the British. They were super wrong. And so he took the will and last statement to, like, his boss, a guy named John Malcolm. And Malcolm was like, I don't know. I need to learn more about this situation before sending this statement up the flagpole, basically.
Yeah, and Malcolm did go and check her out and basically was sympathetic, but at the end of the day, his job was to get those lands for the British Empire, you know, if possible.
Yeah.
And so he wrote an objective report to his boss in which he said of Manu, Rani Lakshmabai is a woman of highly respected and esteemed, and I believe fully capable of doing justice to such a charge. She would have ruled and ruled for years and years, darling. But basically, the gist of that statement is, I like this bitch, but it's a woman.
Uterus.
And she's running stuff in her name of a baby king who wasn't actually, like, their blood relative? What is this?
Right.
Like, that's
right.
What the boots were saying.
Yeah, so Malcolm's boss, the Lord General of India, was like, a woman? As a ruler? I think the fuck not. Now, Nathan.
What's up?
Who was the ruler of Great Britain in 1853?
Oh, that was the one and only Queen V. Queen Victoria, if you nasty.
Right, and she was a woman, if I'm correct, right?
Yup.
Okay. Makes total sense. Cool, what cool, woman cool. Couldn't possibly rule? Cool.
Nah.
It didn't actually have anything to do with sexism. I feel like they just thought, like, if we can find a workaround and we can get in and get their lands. And that's why. That's why I'll give this dude credit. I don't think the Lord General was necessarily sexist. He was just looking for an easy way to grab them lands.
Yeah, that grabbed him lands.
Grabbed him lands.
Oh, so the Lord General appointed a guy named Alexander Skene to run Jhansi. So he rolls into town and starts, you know, setting up shop. And Manu's like, Defurk?
Defurk? Defurk?
That direct needs quote. To be its own GIF.
Merch. Defurk? Just something on.
Rania Jhansi. Defurk?
Defurk?
So she was approached by some Brits and they're like giving her the lowdown at this point.
This is what's going on. They're like, look, you can keep your palace. We love what you've done with the place. It's adorable. So you stay here. You keep it. And we're going to offer you a pretty little pension. Like, you're going to live comfortably for the rest of your life. Dumbledore would still inherit all of Gengadar's personal property and money, but no titles, no land. You are just some rich bitch that lives here at our pleasure. You have no power anymore.
Every time I read the word titles, it looks like titties, but not them titties. You ain't getting them titties. You ain't getting those titles.
Nathan, what?
I don't know. It's been a long week.
You're so special.
Thanks. My mom called me special too. So how do we think that Ronnie of John Z took this news?
Oh, the answer is not great, Nathan.
She said to have absolutely lost her shit and started yelling at the Brits, "I will not surrender my John Z.
I will not surrender my John Z."
How punk rock.
She is, yes, punk rock as fuck.
Yes.
Sadly, though, there's not anything she could do, you know? No. She wrote a letter to complain.
She was ye old Karen. Let me complain to your manager.
I need to talk to your supervisor. And surprise, surprise, Skeen just never sent her letter on to, like, his boss. So she never talked. She wrote several, just being like, and those do survive. Those are, like, the only thing that survived from her. And they're very elegant, and they're very, like, they're very well written out, which is unsurprising. She was a very educated woman. But yeah, they never, returned to sender. Like, sorry. Like,
right. And let's be real. Like, Manu had no reason to see her people die over this. Like,
yeah. She wasn't going to be like, let's raise an army. Yeah.
She was like, let's be cool. Let's see what they can do. If nothing changes on your day-to-day life, this isn't worth the fight.
I love that. She's not wrong, because for a long time, nothing did change in their day-to-day life. She's like, I don't want to raise an army and have a bunch of you die if your quality of life isn't going down. That's smart. I love that. So for the next year or so, Manu was just kind of left to do her own thing.
Oh.
And she got really into, like, CrossFit.
Pilates.
She would wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and work out. She lifted weights. She ran. She did fencing. She bodybuilding, basically. She loved riding horses. She just really got into her fitness.
That was her jam. Yeah. Everything that I read was like, this bitch lied to ride horses. Like, she
was a horse girl.
Horses. And that's wonderful. I love that. Like, I can totally see her and envision her. It's great.
Yes.
And there's even a story that she started to train an army of women on how to defend themselves. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
She taught an army of women on how to defend themselves. And it wouldn't have been unusual for her to have female guards.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Like, you need to have them pick up a sword or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a knife or two.
Fight.
Like,
yes.
Shankaho, please.
Yeah. Yes. Shankaho 101 with her ladies. Absolutely. I love this for her. And I think if she was a man, I think she would have 1,000% been a military general.
Oh.
Absolutely. Just like her dad. Yeah.
Yeah. That is like, he raised her as his son,
and
she just happened to be a powerful ass bitch.
Yeah. She also got really into charity work. I don't think we're going to go into the caste system of India at the time much.
It's still there.
In this episode, because of where she sat in the caste system, she was not expected to do charity for the poor or to look at poor people. Like, if she wanted to just never look at a poor person, that could have been her. People would have been like, well, that's your right as where you sit in the caste system. She was like, that's fucking dumb. And she did go and help the poor, and she did charity work for the unfortunate. People would have been like, what the fuck are you doing? That is a poor person you just touched. And she's just like, I'm so fucking sure. So, like, that is so, so progressive, really.
Yeah, people loved her for that, because she helped others. She took that shitty situation and made it better.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be nice if we could tell you that she lived a quiet, nice life of CrossFit and Pilates and charity and giving to others? But...
Many people do call her the Joan of Arc of India, and you don't get that name from living a quiet CrossFit life.
Ooh.
So Let's close up this first episode on her by telling you a little bit about some shit that was going down. So we're going to take the focus off of Jhansi and head over to other parts of India. Something you need to know about the way that the military for the East India Company was set up. There was a group of Indian natives who worked in the British military, and they were called sepoys. And they were like lower ranking in the military. Most sepoys spent their entire careers in like the American military, you know, like private is like the lowest. They basically, you don't really meet a whole lot of tenured people in the American military that stay at private, but sepoys didn't have like a way to build their rank up. So there was no room for growth and the pay was shitty.
But it's a reliable job.
It's a steady paycheck.
Exactly. Yeah. So there were a lot of sepoys fighting for the British Army, and there were 300,000 of these sepoys in the British Army in India compared to 50,000 Brits. So vastly outnumbered.
Yes.
And there were lots and lots of grievances that have been going on for a long time. But what we're about to explain is just kind of when everything hit the fan. Shit hit the fan.
Boiling point. Yeah, shit
got to it. We have 300,000 and you have 50. Why are we doing all this work for you? Like, yes. It's literally the revolt.
Why are we seeing the white people go through the ranks so much faster? You know, yeah.
Bullshit.
So now,
India's calling bullshit.
Now, the two major religions in India at the time are Hindu and Islam. So in Hinduism, the cow is sacred. Like you said earlier, they don't really eat a lot of meat. And then in Islam, they don't consume or really touch pork at all. Like they don't really use anything made with like pig's leather or anything. So that's important to the rest of this story.
Yeah. And it's going to cause a fight.
Yes.
And in their military training, everyone at the time had muskets. So you remember ye old trusty musket.
You have to like reload it every time after you shoot it.
Like shove the bullet down and grease the cartridges, open it up. Then you shoot the bullet of whatever the fuck a musket is. We're not weapons people here at Queen's Podcast.
No. So to do the violence, you have to load the musket, you have to bite the top off of these greased cartridges. You open it up and then pour the bullets in. But one day, this rumor starts going around of like, what are these greased with? And so the rumor starts going around, they're greased with fat from an animal. So maybe cow fat or maybe pork fat, which would have been against the religion of just about every one of their 300,000 sepoys in the British Army.
Yeah, and in May of 1857, a group of 85 sepoys who refused to do the drills, you know, because animal fat muskets, not kosher.
Against our religion.
Yeah, they were being punished and put in chains. Really, are you trying to... Are you trying to start a revolt?
Right.
Are you Barbara?
So, Barbara. British Barbara, listen. So this was a mistake on the British part because tensions were already high and they weren't reading the fucking room.
Through the door.
And all these people in India are finally like, okay, they come to our country and they don't respect our beliefs. Are they trying to trick us into converting to their religion? They're putting our dudes in chains for not wanting to go against our religion. Where does this stop?
I'm reaching a boiling point.
And this has been going on for like 200 years now, you know?
So yeah, it's time for hell to break loose.
Yes.
They are done. So a group of sepoys storm the jail where the 85 guys were being held and they kill all the jailers. But then they go on to find the jailers' families and kill their wives and children. Like, horrible.
Which I don't love that. I mean, the jailers, all's fair in war. But, like, the kids didn't do shit.
It's a vendetta. Like, it is a gross vendetta. And we are not here for that.
So this happened in Meerut, India. And the group starts marching to Delhi. So that's not a short march the whole way along. This gave me Boudicca vibes. You know, the whole way along marching, they were recruiting people to join them. They were getting more and more rebels, and they were making pit stops to do some more ransacking and killing. But now, again, it's not soldiers they're killing. They are killing British children. You know, like, no one's in the right here. There's years and years of grievances, forced policy, generations of occupancy, and people are just fucking pissed. And it's just... It's they call it the mutiny, but it's just, it feels like so much more than mutiny when it comes to just like murdering.
Well, it's generations
it's growing
of,
and growing. It's generational trauma. For sure.
It's like generational trauma where it's like, you're not taking our land. Excuse me, what?
Yeah.
It's exactly the vibe. So it started with just soldiers, but then more and more people who are pissed about these dumbass white people coming in and trying to run my shit.
Yeah. So one thing I do want to go into, and I'm not going to touch on a whole lot. They were pissed about some of the reform, like all the reforms that they felt impeded on their religious rights. But a bunch of the reforms as a woman.
It's true. They were good. But just say it. They were good.
The three big ones that people were really pissed off about, at least that I kept coming across. Maybe there was more. Maybe it's just because I am... the publications I read have feminist leanings or something. Since the British got there, they passed a rule about, they upped the age of consent from 10 to 12.
Because, okay, progress.
Yeah. They made it, they allowed women to inherit land, like before women couldn't inherit anything. Or, so now they're like, no, if somebody wants to leave their stuff to a woman, they can leave it to a woman. And the one that I spent the biggest, I spent an entire day of, I took an entire day of research off to learn about, are you familiar with the practice of sati?
Go, Katie, activate rabbit hole.
We are not going to spend too much time on this because this is what scholars call a big fucking bummer. But it's the practice of a man dies if he leaves behind. And like when the man dies at his funeral, they like do a pyre, you know, they set him on fire and the wife, if she doesn't have any children, is supposed to go and lay down on the pyre with her and with him.
This girl is on fire.
Literally. So the British outlawed that and they were pissed about that. And so like, the deep rabbit hole that I'm not going to tell you everything I learned, it was kind of like, amongst the people, it was like, no, but it's an honor. Like, it's what you're supposed to do. But then the British get there and they're like, well, if they want to burn themselves on this funeral pyre, why are you tying them up? Why are they screaming and crying that they don't want to do it? You know? And so they made that illegal. All of those reforms are super cool.
They're also pissed about taxes.
Yes. So put yourself in their shoes. They're coming here. They're changing our culture, whether it's for the better or worse.
No,
it's not their fucking business.
I'm revolting.
But no, if y'all do want to learn more about satis, let me know. I guess we could do a Patreon episode on it. It'll be a fucking bummer, but let us know. Anyway.
You know what's a bummer? Taxes.
Taxes are also a bummer. Yes.
The people of India felt like they weren't seeing enough improvement to their towns in proportion to the taxes they were paying, which is not an uncommon thing.
That was America's entire thing. No taxation without representation, you know?
So all of that is going on and word spreads to Jhansi and it sounds like the mob is coming her way. So she goes to Skeen and is like, hey, is it cool if I just like build up this army for protection? Maybe, possibly. And he's like, cool. Nothing's going wrong here.
What could go wrong here? So that's where we're going to leave you for today.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I wonder what happens. Don't Google it.
You heard it here first.
Cheers, bitches.